Welcome to Too Long Didn't Read, the show that, like Trump in his Alaska meeting with Putin, just about manages to sound informed while furiously Googling stuff during the lunch break. I'm Catherine Bohart, and this is a show with so many angles on the news it's like Nicola Sturgeon's haircut. Sharp, incisive, and timeless, yet confusingly sexy. Too Long Didn't Read, we take a deep dive into one big news story with the help of comedians and an expert. But before that, what else has caught my eye this week? In big news for me and all the other messy bitches who live for drama, so that's me and the entire cast of The Archers, Taylor Swift is releasing a new album. Taylor announced she's releasing her 12th album at 12:12 on the 12th of August after posting a carousel of 12 photos on Instagram. Presumably, this is a play on the end of World War I, which happened on November 11th at 11 a.m. And if in case you're wondering, yes, the album is the bigger story here. Former Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon has released her autobiography just in time for me to ignore it on my holiday in favour of a romanticy about a horny wizard. During her time as First Minister, Nicola oversaw the fallout from a fractious independence referendum, the aftermath of Brexit and the coronavirus pandemic. So naturally, what the pre-release interviews have focused on is a single sentence where she says she never considered sexuality, my own included, to be binary. In several interviews, Sturgeon has been forced to confront the rumours that she's had, as the press put it, a torrid lesbian affair with a French diplomat. Now, the dictionary definition of torrid is both hot and dry. So not only was so not only was the wording salacious, it was also, you'd hope, at least 50% inaccurate. US Vice President J.D. Vance is on holiday in the Cotswolds, immediately raising the twat level from severe to critical. Trump and Putin met this week to discuss the situation in Ukraine. Trump has already called for Putin to agree to a ceasefire or face more US sanctions, but knowing these two, he was probably just flirting. The two leaders will be trying to repair what used to be a very close relationship, which recently soured when Trump discovered Putin had been seeing other world leaders behind his back. Mentioning no names, but Kim Jong-un is a slag, so... Their chosen meeting location, Alaska, is a state famous for a dessert, which, like Donald Trump himself, is icy cold on the inside and horribly scorched on the outside. In fact, Trump actually won't have any Russia experts in the room with him because he's fired them all in a drive to promote loyalty over experience, which, to be fair, sounds pretty Soviet to me. Doctors have said that blowing a conch could help sleep apnea. Could it? Or is this doctors getting annoyed that everyone else gets more sleep than them? Doctors said, and I'm pretty sure this is a quote, if we have to spend our nights hearing about how he just fell on it, you should have to listen to him play it. Can you imagine going back to a guy's house for a one-night stand and he gets his conch out? Unconscionable. The Liberal Democrats, finger on the pulse of the nation as ever, have noticed it's rather hot this week and have launched a campaign for the government to heat-proof the NHS by legislating to install aircon in hospitals and care homes. I mean, call me old-fashioned, but I wonder if we should just start by legislating to install hospital beds and doctors and then work on keeping it a breezy 21 Celsius. I'm also pretty sure 5 minutes ago the elderly were complaining about having their winter fuel allowance taken away, so are these guys too hot or too cold? Make up your mind! I get why they want to talk about cooling down. If we know anything about Ed Davey, it's that this is a guy who loves an excuse to be on water when the Lib Dems are in charge. When? Sorry. When the Lib Dems are in charge, your GP will be fully empowered to prescribe you a combo of beta blockers and 20 minutes on a banana boat. And their suggestions are, to be fair, more reasonable than that of the government, whose guidelines in response to the current heatwave include advice like sleep on the ground floor, avoid fizzy drinks, and I kid you not, delete old emails because data centres use up a lot of water. So, Britain, I want you to know that I too will be wiping my browser history for the planet. But this week's big discovery is that Britain isn't working. And I mean, we have been saying the same thing across the Irish Sea for a while now. Figures from the Office for National Statistics released this week show that unemployment has now reached a four-year high and that the number of job vacancies has fallen by 44,000 over the last 3 months. The news comes at a particularly bad time for 18-year-olds across England, Wales and Northern Ireland who received their A-level results this week. Subjects like business studies and economics saw a huge rise in popularity, so at least the kids will know all the technical terms they need to explain why they're still living with their parents. It's supply and demand, moms. Please stay out of my room slash office slash breakout space. Economic uncertainty, AI and higher interest rates are all contributing to an environment which some people have argued makes it the hardest time ever to be a young person. People who have forgotten the jeans under dresses trend in the mid-noughties, I imagine. Beleaguered Gen Zs are turning to alternative career paths, with 2024 Love Island star Patsy Field going so far as to say it's an embarrassment to work 9 to 5 in this day and age. Instead, Patsy is planning to relocate to Australia, where the UK has always sent its best and brightest. With me to try to figure out what's going on is a man whose job it is to write an imaginary diary every week, so presumably he's given some thought to unemployment. It's the Times broadcaster and journalist, Hugo Rifkind, everybody. Hi, Hugo.
Oh, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
Hugo, I'm trying to figure out what the situation is with unemployment. When my dad tells me I should try to get a proper job, How legitimately can I currently respond with that's actually really hard right now?
Well, look, so employment is a four-year high, but sort of historically speaking, it's quite low. It was like a lot. In 1984, it was 12%, for example. It's now about 4-ish, 4.7%. Even when I was last job hunting in about early 2000s, it was about 6%. Still bad if it happens to you. It's like if you get hit by a bus, it's not much consolation if someone says, this hardly happens to anyone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's
But yeah. I mean, but unemployment is not the same thing as joblessness, right?
What's the distinction?
So joblessness is just people who aren't in work. And about a fifth of adults aren't in work. A fifth of adults aren't in work. They're not classed as unemployed because they're not looking for work. They might be on benefits. They might just not want to work. It's the inactivity rate, we call it. But even the inactivity rate at about a fifth, it's been sort of historically 20-25%, same sort of region since about 1971. If you've not worked consistently since 1971, well done. And are you Prince Andrew? Some of them will be working, though, because they'll be working in the kind of grey economy, the illicit economy, cash in hand.
Okay. Yeah. And also, presumably, some of those people are doing, like, work that we don't value, but still, nonetheless, is real work, like domestic labour and parenting.
Call that work. Sorry.
Hugo, you're speaking to a front row of women.
No, absolutely. And it has historically been difficult. Well, I mean, they shouldn't be considered unemployed because they're not, but they're also not paid. What's changed, though, is although that big kind of chunk of economically inactive people has always been more or less the same size, or at least sort of for a long time it's been about the same size, the people who are in it are different now.
Say more.
Right. So it used to be fairly universally spread, or indeed it was more likely to be women than men because men were more likely to work than women. These days, men were only very slightly more likely to work than women.
Okay.
But you're quite likely, much more likely, increasingly likely, to be workless for whatever reason if you're over 50. Post-pandemic, there's been a huge rise in people over 50 who are workless.
Because everyone was like, I actually love pottering in my garden, or because, we're like, just took early retirement, or because it's actually a totally different environment in which to get a job?
All of those things. Also, a lot more of them are ill and on benefits of some sort, which means they're classed as workless as well. Also, though, there's been a really, really marked rise in young people outside employment, NEETs, not in education, employment, or training. Again, historically, it's not that high, NEETs at the moment. They were higher in 2012, there were more NEETs, but it's gone up like a ski jump since the pandemic.
Why is that?
Who knows, really? I guess it's because the number of jobs that there are around for these people have sort of been in decline. They've been harder to get. It was about 600,000 people were classed as NEETs in 2020, 2021. It's now, I think it's a bit over a million.
Wow, that's a huge jump.
It's a big jump.
And is that because graduate levels specifically, those jobs are difficult to get?
Graduate recruitment, like really, really plunging, down 33% in a year, the number of jobs available for graduates. But it's also much harder to get other jobs now if you're not a graduate. So there's this big trend in like hospitality jobs, things that traditionally wouldn't necessarily be a graduate job, demanding like a 2-2, for example. But the big traditional graduate jobs, the milk round jobs, KPMG, PwC, Deloitte, EY, they hired, I think, 1,000 fewer people last year than the year before.
Oh my goodness, wow. So I assume Gillet sales are also down. Wait, so you can't... It's not like you can just say who your dad is and that you went to Cambridge anymore.
Alas, not. Not anymore.
Devastating.
No. Yeah.
Which jobs... Are there particular jobs other than graduate jobs that are harder to get? Any that are easier? Who are the winners and losers?
There are a lot of jobs that are in sort of sharpish decline. Jobs that are being impacted by AI are in sharpish decline. There was a...
What are those jobs? Because it feels like they change... Every time I read an article about AI.
Any job that requires amassing information and using it, which has always been the bedrock of the middle classes. Things that are protected and regulated, like doctors and lawyers, you're going to be okay. Things like accountants, you're probably in quite a lot of trouble. There were stories in the paper this week about the jobs that they reckon are going to be most resistant to AI. Being a vet, apparently.
Okay.
Yeah, because your dog doesn't want a robot's finger up its bottom.
You said that like the rest of us do, but okay. Sorry about my dog, he's so picky.
It's also worse for men.
Is it?
Yes. What a shame your smile won't come across on radio. There is a he session.
Basically, what does that mean?
A lot of the better paid professions, the junior ranks, are increasingly dominated by women. Men are finding it harder and harder to get those jobs, which means it's going to be really, really hard for white men to keep ruling the world. But you know what? I reckon we'll find a way.
I reckon you'll find a way too. But then once you get a job...
Right.
Plain sailing?
No. There's this weird double thing going on, which is employers want more and more and more and more.
What is this notion of like 9 to 9 that I'm hearing of?
996 is this idea that what your employer wants is for you to work from 9 to 9 6 days a week.
Okay, Dolly Parton's gonna have to write a new song.
Yes.
That's a shame.
So Angela Rayner, before the election, started talking about the right to switch off. Right?
Yeah.
Which was going to make it illegal for employers to contact people by phone or by email outside of working hours. She said that was going to be in the manifesto. It wasn't in the manifesto, perhaps because she hadn't thought about it and then wanted to email somebody about it to put it in the manifesto. But it was outside working hours. And then she forgot. But so it's not there, not happening.
Isn't this something that they have this policy in France, right?
They absolutely have this policy in France. And in fact, before coming on today, I called somebody in France to find out more about it. But they were at lunch.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Hugo Riffian.
Thank you.
Oh, well, we've heard all about the job market from a journalist, but what about a man who's never worked a day in his life? It's Sunil Patel, everyone.
Thank you.
Welcome.
That's not fair.
Oh?
I'm a very hardworking guy.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah?
No, well, look, okay, this sounds like a joke, but before I became a stand-up comedian, my last job was managing a Christmas grotto.
Does that make you Santa, or is there someone above him?
I was actually Santa's boss. Santa's grotto is actually surprisingly top heavy, a bit like the NHS.
Okay, well, it just goes to show it's a cutthroat job market out there, isn't it, Sunil? What's your take on all this?
It is, Catherine, and that's why I've got some rather bad news, I'm afraid.
Oh.
The BBC want you to reapply for your job.
Sorry, just to check in, they want me to reapply to be Catherine Bohart on Too Long Didn't Read with Catherine Bohart.
That's right. They've been running the numbers, and they think it'd be cheaper to have this whole thing written by ChatGPT and presented by a hologram of Cilla Black.
Who's doing the interview?
Me.
You? Why you?
Because I'm a man, all right? That's how the system works. Me and the head of comedy agreed it last night when we were out at the strip club. Lads, lads, lads.
That's gross.
Look, in a competitive job market, you've got to take advantage of the old boys' network, OK? Anyway, look, I'd love to chat, but I'm extremely hungover from all the shots. Now, first question, what are your relevant skills for the job?
I love current affairs. I have some broadcast experience. Most of what... I mean, I'm already hosting the show.
Arrogant. That's the first note. All right, next question. What are your feelings on Jason Statham?
Is that relevant?
Well, I need to know if you're a good workplace fit. You know, are you going to come and watch Crank 2 with the boys, get a load of tango in? Or are you going to be all like, oh, I want to watch Bridget Jones?
What is wrong with Bridget Jones?
There she goes. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Also, don't you think your voice is too high-pitched for Radio 4? What is this, a show for dogs? I knew this would happen. I knew it would happen. All right.
I wrote it, don't worry. Yeah. All right.
I wasn't just scribbling away on the bus here. What is this, a show for dogs?
That is so offensive, Sunil.
Wow. Potential loose cannon. OK, it's time for the team-building section. On the count of three, I want you to leap into the audience and crowd-surf to the back of the room.
I'm obviously not going to do that. We have not done a risk assessment. Someone could die.
Not a team player. I should tell you that as well as a holographic Cilla Black, there is another candidate in the running for this job.
It's you, isn't it?
Well, I'm not at liberty to say. All I can say is it's a suave, wild man of the UK comedy scene, known for his intense sensual allure.
Joel Dommett?
That's rude. Now, have you brought any references?
No, I didn't know the interview was happening. Can I ask someone in the audience to be my referee?
Can you vouch that Catherine isn't a criminal, a troublemaker, or someone who labels her milk in the workplace kitchen? All right, whatever. Now, for the final section of the interview, I would like you to give a three-second presentation about why you, Catherine Bohart, are the best woman for the job.
OK. I'm hardworking, and I'm passionate, and I'm curious.
All right. I don't need to know about your personal life. That's your time up. Now, OK, Catherine, thanks for your interest in the role of being Catherine Bohart on Too Long Didn't Read with Catherine Bohart. We'll be in touch.
But did I get it?
Well, let's call the rest of this episode a trial shift.
Thank you. My colleague and arch nemesis, Sunil Patel, everyone. I honestly didn't even know I worked for him. But okay, good to know. They say, be the change you want to see in the world. So we've given a third person a job to talk to us tonight. Please welcome this evening's expert, the wonderful Isabel Berick. Leads the Financial Times Working It brand, covering the workplace, management, and the future of work. And her book, The Future Proof Career, comes out in paperback next week. Hello.
Hi.
Welcome. I'm glad you're here. Hugo got us worried, I would say. Hope you're here with more happy news.
More upbeat news.
Yeah. I'm really sorry to talk about unemployment figures behind their back, but they seem all over the place.
They are all over the place. And actually, the real numbers are quite low. About 7% of the population, working age population, is on long-term sick. And I think that's a huge issue. It's about 3.8 million on long-term sick.
Are they trying to figure out why people are on long-term sick?
Yeah, and actually, if we're talking about being out of work for younger people, it's increasingly mental health conditions. And that has gone, it's huge since the pandemic.
Is there any connection between young people having to live with their parents longer and being depressed?
I think the pandemic had a lot to do with that. You know, as we all know, a lot of people spent a lot of time in their bedrooms.
What degree of joblessness or the lack of job vacancies is down to AI occupying jobs? And is that threat for the future, or is it happening already?
It's happening already, but probably we don't know the full extent. So there's a lot of other stuff. So it's what we would call a perfect storm of stuff happening in the world at the moment, like, you know, geopolitics, economic uncertainty, obviously the AI, stuff like society's polarizing. So if you're a human who's uncertain, as we all are, think about how you behave when you're uncertain. Like, you may not embark on that bathroom renovation or house purchase. You hold off, you're uncertain.
Yeah.
It's the same with graduate recruitment. The leaders are uncertain. They don't know what's going to happen, so they're cutting the graduate recruitment. Yeah, we're behaving like humans do, but actually it's going to have a massive knock-on effect in about, say, 5 years' time.
Okay.
When you're not building the workforce, you're going to have a massive gap, basically.
Okay, so on the expectation that AI might take jobs, we're creating less jobs for fear that those jobs won't be as necessary anymore.
I mean, AI will take jobs, but we really don't know. Actually, I cannot tell you how much hype there is about AI. I get hundreds of emails a week about AI, and the reality of the billions and billions and billions that's going into AI is not matched by the reality in workplaces.
Okay, so the people who aren't working, not people who are in long sick, but people who are not working, who are they? How are they managing?
So there's a lot more what we might call entrepreneurial activity, and a lot of Gen Z want to work for themselves. So they don't want to work for the man, as my son would say. They want to sort out their own lives. And I think the lack of trust that people have in governments, it's mirrored in the workplace. So people don't trust institutions. Many fewer Gen Zs want corporate jobs. There are fewer corporate jobs to have, so that's just as well. But actually, generationally, they're not as interested. You know, I was desperate to get a job and a pension because I'm quite boring. So it's actually good that they've got more imagination. So they might be side hustling on Etsy. They might be running one or two.
I can't be doing with Etsy.
Well,
I'm sorry. I just think it's skills that should have been bullied out of you as a child. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm sorry. So, okay, so they're all trying to side hustle, which isn't a dance move.
I mean, there are people who are doing more than one job. So, you know, one of the aspects of this we haven't talked about is the polygamous people. So they've got...
I honestly didn't see it coming up, Isabel, but let's get into it.
There are people who've got literally two or three full-time jobs.
Okay, we're using that word differently. Multiple jobs, like...
It's a stitching together of a career rather than getting someone to offer it to you on a plate.
It does seem mad that post-pandemic, when it turned out we could all just work from home, that we have all just been like, well, back to the way things were, and they didn't expect us to have any feelings about that.
So something like 85% of managers think that their staff are not working hard when they're at home, and 85% of staff think they work incredibly hard when they're at home. So that's a really big gap. So if you talk about the four-day week, to a manager who is measuring productivity in bums on seats, that's a massive drop.
Okay.
But actually, you should be measuring output, and you can do the same output in 4 days that you can do in five if you're efficient, and actually that has, you know, lots of people do.
Presumably, we're talking about Gen Z hopping from job to job. Is the shift purely generational? And if it's generational, is it permanent?
Yeah, I think it's permanent. It's not. Actually, we can learn a lot. I think those of us who are older in workplaces learn a lot from Gen Z's coming up because, you know, we sat there and took terrible treatment from awful. This is not you, Catherine, if you've never had an office job. But, you know, we had terrible treatment.
Oh, no, my boss is a nightmare. It's just that she's me. hell.
So we can learn from, you know, they don't take it.
Does that mean, so essentially they're more empowered to advocate for themselves?
Yes, they are empowered.
How do words like boundaried play in a corporate environment?
Well, that used to mean offence, but now... But now it doesn't. Now it means I work the hours that I'm contracted to work and no more. And actually, it's quite a divisive word in workplaces. The use of the word boundary is, I hesitate to say, triggering for some older managers.
Fascinating. Okay, amazing. I love the idea that Gen Z have taken one look at the concept of a job and labelled it gaslighting. It's now your turn. If you have questions for me or for Isabel, more importantly, the expert, then we'd love to hear them. Does anyone have a question? Hello, what's your name?
Hi, I'm Makayla. I'm 23 years old, so I've just completed an acting program. My question is, do you think you even need a degree or a university in this day and age to be successful?
Do you need a degree to be successful? No, absolutely not. And in fact, one of the things that we need more of in this country is apprenticeships and degree apprenticeships. They're incredibly hard to get. It's actually probably harder than to get into Oxbridge or a top university to get an apprenticeship or a degree apprenticeship.
Absolutely no one who went to Oxbridge is going to want to hear you say that.
It's just because that's the future. We need more people who have got those skills. And if you've done drama, you've got amazing people skills.
I don't know. I know a lot of actors with horrible people
skills. Oh, that's interesting.
Hello. What's your name?
Catherine.
Hi, Catherine. It's a solid name, Catherine. Off you go. Brilliant. What's your question?
So, like, unemployment statistics have been brought up a lot. Is there any real geographical bearing on those? Because just from young people that I know, people who live in more rural areas are struggling to find jobs because there's no viable opportunities near them. They can't get to anywhere. But then people in cities are struggling to find jobs because they're competing with so many more people for them.
Yeah, it's a very neat summation of the problem indeed. Yes, and in fact, there have been some big studies done about long-term unemployment, even in cities, and actually a lot of it is to do with the fact people can't get to jobs. So the buses may run at not the time when you need to get to your job if you live in a rural area. So we need a lot more joined up thinking about public transport, for example. That's one thing. But a lot of money is going to the rural economy. For example, the government is trying to set up AI clusters. There's one, the first one's going to be around Oxford, I think, and there's one in Scotland. So maybe at some point, really great tech jobs will roll out in other parts of the country that are not London, Oxford, Cambridge, Dublin, where the tech clusters are currently.
There's a tech cluster in Dublin.
It's normally a cluster. It's like a techopolis.
Hello, what's your name?
Hi, I'm Daisy.
Hi, Daisy. What's your question?
So I kind of wondered what the incentive is for the workless population that you're talking about, particularly like if people are out of work because of their mental health and also because they don't think it's worth it. So what's the point of them working now?
At its best, work does give you a sense of purpose. It helps you to discover parts of your identity you perhaps didn't know. Leading people can be a really interesting thing to do and very rewarding to help other people in their careers. But you're right. For a lot of people, then there are big questions about, do I want to work? But I think people underplay how good work can be in our lives.
Where else do you have your affairs? Do you know? Okay, thank you so much to Isabel Berrick, everyone. And let's welcome back Hugo Rifkind, everyone. Hugo.
Hello.
What have you learned? What have we learned? What do you think?
You know what? I think we've learned it's not awful on paper, only in reality. And that's not even a joke, because that makes it really, really hard to identify what the problem is, to tell government, you know, what they ought to do. I think we've also learned it's a really good idea to have not been born any later than 1987.
Do you have a hero of the week?
Have you heard of the Pretend to Work company in China?
No, but it sounds up my street. Go on.
The Pretend to Work company in China is this relatively new organisation that's set up. And what it is, it's an office, a beautiful, lovely office where anyone would love to work. No one works there. People pay to go there and pretend they work there, right? It's kind of like we work, but we don't work. And, well, they do this for a feeling of self-worth and also to stay in touch with what it is like to work in an office. It's all the fun of a grinding office job, but without the money.
Well, before the show, we asked our audience what dream benefit from an employer would mean that they give total employee loyalty. My favourite one is a psychiatrist couch with a psychiatrist.
Right.
Enforced spa days and a 4-day week. Somebody else has written drugs, yo. Honestly, I didn't expect from this crowd, but shout out to that person. Bottomless ice cream. Have you ever had that at a job?
I don't know what that means.
Right. I just remember that you've probably never had a period. Okay. I was like, why don't you? Okay, yeah. Unlimited free Haribo. That feels like a cheap hire.
Yep, sure.
Or other end of the extreme, free use of a private jet.
Yeah, see, I'm not an employer, but if I was, I'd employ the Haribo guy.
Yeah, I get that. I really get that. And then, oh, this one's sad. More than 20-minute lunch break in a 10-hour day and nothing thrown at my head. Brackets from a recent ex-teacher. Well, on that note, whose Instagram should we be lurking?
Nobody's Instagram, you fool. Get on LinkedIn.
Well, this has been Too Long Didn't Read, the show that's fun but newsy like the back of a toilet stall in your local Spoons. And thank you at home for listening. See you next week. Goodbye.
Too Long Didn't Read was written and hosted by Catherine Bohart with Hugo Rifkind, Sunil Patel and Isabel Berrick. It was also written by Georgie Flynn, Madeline Brettingham and Christina Riggs. The producer was Alison Vernon-Smith. It was a Mighty Bunny production for BBC Radio 4.